Archbishop Vincent Nichols, welcome back to Vatican Radio.
Thank you very much.
You're here in the Vatican for the final day of Pope Benedict's pontificate. You were here also, weren't you, for the first day of his pontificate?
I was here for the day of his installation, and I remember, much to my surprise, going to the very first audience that he gave, which was the following day, if I remember rightly, for the media. And I had the privilege of greeting him personally on that first audience day.
What kind of memories do you have from the early days of the pontificate?
To me, there was when I greeted him and he looked up and he said, "What are you doing here?" He seemed to me to be quite excited, even though obviously it's a great burden. But he, I thought, was looking forward to the role of pontiff and of guiding and of teaching the church. And I think that's what he's done. To a wonderful degree. He has been a most exceptional, a great teacher of the faith and a teacher of the things of the Spirit.
Even that inaugural Mass, that first homily, was very striking, wasn't it? With its depth of spirituality.
It was. And his homily at the funeral Mass of Pope John Paul II, that wonderful allusion to the window. And I noticed just in the last few days, one of the cardinals said that his preaching to us had opened a window onto the gospel and onto the things of heaven. And I think that theme has gone right through his pontificate.
What is the feeling in the UK right now? How are Catholics in England and Wales responding to this extraordinary moment in the life of the Church?
Well, I think the first emotion that is probably still there is one of sadness, actually. When the Holy Father came to Britain in 2010, he did win the hearts of most people. And he left with a kind of image of him as everybody's favourite grandfather. And it was lovely to see in the square a banner saying, "Il nonno della Chiesa," to say, well, here now, we haven't lost him, but he's moving to be a kind of grandfatherly figure in prayer and in support for the church. So I think there is a great sense of sadness, but there's also a great sense of gratitude, of thankfulness for the ministry that he gave. I mean, I've been thinking about his legacy, and in one sense, I would put it like this. Pope Benedict leaves the Church far less focused on its own success and far more focused on the person of Christ and the essential relationship between each disciple and the Lord and Christ at the centre of the Church. And I think that focus, that legacy, is the absolute prerequisite for coping with the difficulties faced by the Church and motivating the mission of the Church. So he has taken us to our foundations over and over and over again. And that's a radical thing to do, the proper meaning of the word radical, to go back to the foundations.
You mentioned the papal visit to Britain in 2010. The theme of that was Cardinal Newman's phrase, "Heart speaks unto heart." And we heard Benedict use that same phrase again in his last greeting to
we
the
did.
Cardinals.
It was very striking, and I was thrilled to hear it. But I think we always knew his love and grasp of Newman's mind and writings. But again, I think it points to this essential element that he has brought and taught and deepened in the Church. For me, the most powerful memory of his visit to the United Kingdom, you know, given the fact of the drama of his address at Westminster Hall, will be the moments in Hyde Park when he knelt in utter contemplation before the Blessed Sacrament under that night sky with 90,000 people, silent, in prayer, focused on the Lord. And there's a wonderful letter I received after that when a mother wrote to me and she said, "In those 15 minutes of silence, my teenage boys learnt more about their faith and more about prayer than I'd ever managed to teach them in all their young lives." So he was a powerful teacher, not just by what he said, but by what he chose to do and what he asked us all to do in our relationship with the Lord.
The Pope has also sent special greetings, hasn't he, at the end of his pontificate? You've had a letter, I understand, addressed specifically to the Church and to the people of the United Kingdom.
Yes, and I was surprised. I'd written, as I imagine many people have done, to thank him and to salute his courage and his humility in this decision that he's taken. But I got a letter back from the Secretariat of State, and it said how much the Pope cherished his memories of the visit to the United Kingdom and was with us in heart and in prayer.
You've also held a couple of Thanksgiving masses, haven't you, in Westminster Cathedral, not just for the Catholic community?
One was for the diocese on the feast of the Chair of St. Peter, and on Sunday we had a kind of wider national mass. And I was very pleased that there was a good, strong ecumenical representation at that mass. Now, in the homily that I gave, I focused very strongly on the Christocentric vision of Benedict XVI and the Christocentric ecclesiology that he has been repeating and repeating. And afterwards, the ecumenical guest said, you know, that really is a very, very positive and helpful context into which to place the papacy. One of them said, I didn't know how you would approach this moment, but that is so refreshing and so encouraging for us all.
There are those who see this resignation, this perhaps change, if you like, in the way we see and understand the role of the Bishop of Rome. There are those who see that as very helpful to the understanding of the Bishop of Rome, the primacy of St. Peter. Do you share that view?
Well, I think what's more helpful is the Christological focus. I'm not sure how the consequences of his decision to step down will unfold, if you like, theologically and ecclesiologically. That remains to be seen. I don't think it's, in that sense, a practical downplaying of the role of the papacy and of the importance of it as the sign of unity for, we believe, all the followers of Christ. But I do think the way in which he has placed himself always as the servant of Christ and as the disciple of Christ, that focus on the priority of Christ is something that all Christians can find their way more deeply into engagement around what oversight in the church means and what the charisms and the gift that are brought by having a visible centre of unity, as if you like a touchstone, what that brings. I remember in ecumenical discussions some time ago when we were talking about authority in the church, and some of the Reformed churches talked about documents as their kind of touchstones. And I said, well, in the Catholic Church, the litmus test of your orthodoxy is a person. And it's a person who can hug you. It's a person who can say yes to you, or he can say no to you. But therefore, that authority is always in the context of a relationship, ideally of love. And that makes it a very living and a very vibrant part of the discipleship of the Christian, and not, as it were, a piece of technology, something that is a self-correcting mechanism that a machine might have.
Ecumenism remains, of course, a very important issue for the church in the UK. How much do you think ecumenism is going to be seen as one of the challenges facing the next pontificate?
Well, I think, and it's inevitable here in Rome, that we have to take a wider, if you like, a global view. And when I think of the challenges facing the church here, I can't help but think of the fact that in the last 100 years, there have been more martyrs for the faith than in any time in Christian history. So, if you like, the context in which the church tries to live its life and its mission is very, very challenging. Now, part of that is to do with dialogue with secular perceptions of life, but it's also to do with dialogue with other faiths and within the Christian body itself. So for the sake of mission, these relationships are crucially important. I think in England, obviously, the new Archbishop of Canterbury will take up his office on the 21st of March. And I'm assured that if the installation of the new Pope follows that date, then he will be here. And that will be an important beginning for the Anglican Communion as well. And I hope these two things do build a new impetus of ecumenism and of partnership and mission for us.